And we welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and at Tara Wellman on Twitter. Even got a bird seeds out of Tara this week. This was an impressive week right there. I mean, forget about the Cardinals. We've got Tara back on video. That's awesome.
Big news. Big news, everybody. Yeah. We'll see how it continues.
Yeah. So if you haven't, check that out over on YouTube. We should also say...
Two videos, actually.
I missed the second... I'm even behind.
Yeah. It happens. It's been a while. People are out of practice.
That's right. That's right. We're like, you know, we can't handle all this content coming one time, Tara. What are we going to do? We should say, first, I guess, happy 500 day. The Cardinals have won their 81st game. Guaranteed they're not going to be a losing team this season, which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to do that at the beginning of September, because I think the last few years, you know, they're winning game 81 at like with like 5-6 games left. It's kind of nice to know that they're going to hit that, you know, they've hit break even, if nothing else, and then everything else is going to just kind of add to that total for the rest of the month.
Yeah, everything else puts them just that much closer to the possibility of a division championship, which, you know, it's funny because even just a few weeks ago, but certainly a month ago or more, we were clinging to the idea that a wild card spot was still possible. And now we're talking about a team that has put itself in position to win a division. So to have basically the rest of the month to figure that out and to try to stake their claim is a much better position than I think we thought for most of the year they'd be in come the first week of September.
Absolutely. And part of the reason, not always, and we'll talk about the Cardinals because they've done a lot of this work themselves, but we do have to acknowledge that part of the reason the Cardinals are up 4.5 games as we hit the week after Labor Day is because the Brewers did their job. Over the last 2 weeks, the Brewers have won, let's see, 5 of 7 against the Cubs, continuing to give them the beatdowns, and either in dramatic fashion or not. You know, like I said on Twitter, it's the last day we're going to cheer for the Brewers all season long, probably, but it was really nice to see them step up, especially on a day like today. They get down 3-0 and come back and just pulverize them. You love to see the Cubs lose, but it's kind of fun to see them losing when the Cardinals are winning.
Yeah, I think I saw today that this was the first year that the Brewers have won the season series with the Cubs since 2013, which was a little bizarre to me because the Brewers have been fairly relevant in the conversation in the division the last few years. Certainly last season, surprising everyone with the sustainability of their sort of bullpen model for pitching. But this year has been weird for them because in many ways, they put together a team that should have been ultra competitive again, at least from an offensive standpoint, and they've just had absolutely miserable luck with pitching, whether it's guys just underperforming or getting hurt or coming back from injury and, oh, actually not being good anymore. The number of players that they've released from the guys that on paper at the beginning of the year you were like, yeah, these are going to be major players. Now all of a sudden they're DFA'd, they're released, whatever. It's shocking to me. So they've been a bit of a mess, and then to come in the last week and still manage to win that season series against the Cubs. Yeah, I'm pretty happy about that at this point.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's not something we're going to continue to do. You know, especially not as the Brewers come into Busch at this weekend, and they're going to have a lot still to play for. Perhaps not more than we thought, given that they're currently 6.5 out, but just 2 games out of the wild card. But it was great. It was just, I mean, again, it's always good to see the Cubs lose. Because Cubs could be 0-50, 0-150. It's still good to see the Cubs lose. Don't get me wrong. But it's really good to see them lose when the Cardinals are doing their job. And that's what's pretty impressive about what we've seen over the last 10 days. 10 days ago, the Cardinals had the rain out against the Reds, and they had a 1-game lead. The Cubs won that night, had a 1-game lead in the division. Since then, they have lost 3 times. And have extended that lead out to 4.5 to the point where I believe I saw today, I think it's 538's projections, had the Cardinals at about a 84-85% chance to win the division and about a 94% chance to make the playoffs. You know, just to, like you were saying, a month or so ago, it's 37% or something like that they're actually making the playoffs. To see this team finally put that pedal down and win with great pitching, and I think that's the big thing, but the offense has been remarkable to the point that if a starter has a bad game, you don't immediately write them off because they've been coming back all year long.
Yeah, and it's nice to see them. I mean, obviously, it's great to see Jack Flaherty pitch another gem today. I mean, to see him in back-to-back starts go 8 innings, and most of the time he's going 8 innings while shutting out the opponent. Now, a lot right now for the Cardinals has to do with who their opponent is. They're not necessarily playing the Dodgers and the Astros of the world at this point, but to have that kind of consistency from Jack Flaherty is huge. To see that from, for the most part, Dakota Hudson is huge. To get a big start on the road from Adam Wainwright was awesome. But then, to me, what's so impressive about this last month or so is that even when they lose, they're still scoring runs. And that was not the case in, like, June of this year. Even as a 500 team, it was like, I have no idea how they're going to scrape one run across tonight, so we better hope that the pitching holds up. So to see them not only score runs in bunches where they're you know, putting double digits up on the board, which is great, but to see them come back the next night and still score 5 runs, and to see them come out the next night and maybe they lose, but they still scored 7 runs and they lost 9-7 or whatever. So to see the offense doing that gives you a little more confidence that they can be consistent on that end of the game. And then the pitching sort of coming into its own at this point, with the possible exception of the bullpen showing some signs of fracturing, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later. It gives a little bit of a cushion to the pitching staff on this team to know that these guys, yeah, can maybe get down by a couple of runs early, but come back, whether it's in the very next inning or if it's not till the 7th or 8th, and they can still pull off a win. So that's the offensive consistency that has been missing so much of this year. And what's wild is that we're still not seeing the best of Paul Goldschmidt or Matt Carpenter, who we all thought had to be the driving force of this offense for them to find any consistency at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of remarkable that, you know, if you want to look at it, they're like 2 Paul DeJong plays away from sweeping this week.
Yeah.
And not to put everything on Paul DeJong, because there were many opportunities in those 2 games afterwards to lock the door. It just seemed to all unravel when something weird happened with Paul. But you're right. Now, the key is going to be whether they can do this going forward. They have the Rockies this week and then the Brewers at the end of the week, which the Brewers pitching staff is kind of, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. We've seen them be good against the Cubs, like we said, but we've also seen them get beat up. But then after that, you know, they have the Nationals, they have the Cubs, they have the Diamondbacks, they have the Cubs to finish the year. And, you know, you want to see if the offense will be able to continue to put up 4 runs a night, 5 runs a night. And if they do, if they can do that against some higher quality competition, it makes you feel a lot better about October. Because right now, I think there's some fans, maybe me too, they're just kind of holding their breath a little bit and saying, look, this team looks like it's going to be the class of the NL Central. I think that, not that things can't happen and things can't go into a major tailspin, but right now, you know, again, good chance that they're going to be able to make the playoffs as the NL Division NL Central Division winner. But when you have to go against the Dodgers, when you have to go against the Braves, you want to have a little bit of confidence that they're able to do that. And I don't know. I guess that is how much of this is the competition and how much of it is these guys really starting to click and come together.
I mean, I think ideally it's a little bit of both, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you have a section of the schedule that is like this, you hope you take advantage of it. I mean, you don't get to decide at the beginning of the year who's going to be good and who's going to be bad and how your schedule breaks at the end of September. You just sort of roll with it. Mm-hmm. And when you end up in the last month of the season playing a majority of your games against teams that aren't going to necessarily factor into the postseason discussion, I mean, you hope that you sort of roll those teams in most of those games. But at the same time, you're right. It doesn't give you a great measuring stick as far as what you look like against teams that have been more successful this season. Baseball's weird in that any given night, any team can beat any other team. And, you know, you'll see a team that is struggling to even still see the 500 mark just absolutely rout a team that's been at the top of the division all year. And you're like, how did that happen? But, I mean, that's one of the things that's weird about baseball. So we've seen those things happen. And I guess my point is we've seen the Cardinals crumble in recent seasons down the stretch, regardless of their opponent. Mm-hmm. And to see them at this point, not just squeaking out wins, but getting better at the game as far as, like we mentioned, Jack Flaherty and Dakota Hudson and Adam Wainwright going out, everybody just kind of stepping into that next level play that we haven't seen from them, at least consistently most of the season. So yeah, does some of it belong to the fact that the schedule is what it is? Probably, but I mean, you can't discredit it just because their opponents aren't the Dodgers or the Astros of the NL right now. But, I mean, they are going to have to figure that out because all of a sudden the Diamondbacks look like they want to try to make it to the postseason again. Like, what happened there? Where'd that come from? And then they do have the Cubs and the Nationals. Those are all postseason contending teams in one way or another. So they're going to have to, well, maybe not have to. I guess we're going to get a pretty good look at whether or not they're only looking good right now because of their opponent or because they are actually capable of competing against other postseason contending teams. And that is still a little bit terrifying to me. But what we've seen as of late, I think, is an encouraging sign. It just doesn't necessarily finish writing the story of the 2019 season quite yet.
And to be fair, I mean, this team wasn't beating those teams in May and June.
Right.
You know, they were losing games like that they should be winning or, you know, not being able to scrape by. So it does feel like Mike Shildt has spent this. We've talked about this before. It's like Mike Shildt spent the first half of the season trying to find the right combinations, playing guys out, trying to really determine what they were doing. And then after the All-Star break, he's like, okay, now that I've got this data, now we're going to start, you know, moving things around, shifting things around. We're now seeing late in the season Matt Carpenter be this glorified pinch hitter who doesn't even get to run the bases, which
we all know is probably for the best.
Yeah, I'm not complaining, but especially with expanded rosters, it's very interesting to see, you know, Matt Carpenter. And it feels like, without looking at the numbers, but it feels like Matt Carpenter has kind of embraced that, you know, that he has been able to come off the bench and give some decent hits. I don't know that he's won any. Well, he won the game against Cincinnati. I don't remember if that was coming off the bench or not. But, you know, he's had some hits and some doubles. I'm not saying that he's vintage Matt Carpenter or that he needs to be starting on a regular basis, but it's nice to get something out of him. And I feel like Mike Shildt, one, knows what he's doing with these putting people out there, which is not something we've always said about Mike Shildt. Maybe more about us than about him. But also that the players have all bought into this. They seem to understand their roles. They seem to be willing to do whatever. And granted, winning helps build that chemistry as well. But a lot of that's got to be pointed to the guy that's running this thing, and it never really got out of hand on him.
Yeah, you know, the criticisms of Matt Carpenter are a little bit bizarre to me, not because his actual play is above criticism, because it's certainly not. He's been critical of it. He's been very candid in the way that he's talked about his own game. But I feel like he's also been pretty clear in expressing that right now he just wants to help this team win. And, you know, it feels a little bit resigned from him as far as his own stat line this season. But on the flip side of that, he still feels like if he can be in there and contribute and help the team win, then that's everything that he wants to do right now. The criticisms about his character and his attitude and his work ethic and, you know, whether or not he's buying in, like you said, it's all very strange to me because it feels like it's coming out of... Look... If you can't criticize, if you're not going to criticize a guy when he's playing well for his character and for his integrity and for what kind of teammate that he is, to then suddenly flip the script when he's not playing well and say, no, he's actually got a really bad attitude and nobody likes him and he doesn't want to play here. Like, it's a weird thing for me because to assume that his bad season and the struggles that he's having aren't going to affect his emotional and mental state is a little bit bizarre, but also to then make that about his character as a teammate is, it feels a little off, and it feels a little bit like, why have we not heard this before? Because he's been around a while, and he's gone through struggles before. The team hasn't been great for the last several years. Where is this coming from? So, look, I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm not around those guys all the time. I don't know who he's friends with or if he's friends with any of those guys. I don't know what the dynamic is like on and off the field with them. So I'm certainly not in a position to say with any sort of, you know, definitive yes or no what his approach or his mental state or his attitude about the game right now is. But it's a weird place to try to criticize right now for me when he has been willing to take more of a backseat. He basically has had not only his starting position taken away, but when he is in there, he's not the leadoff guy anymore, not by a long stretch. And you're right, most of the time when he doesn't get the start, he might get to pinch hit and he might come through and win in walk-off fashion for the team with a single up the middle. But his job is far from guaranteed at this point, and he has not stopped putting in the work to contribute any chance he gets. And to me, that deserves some level of credit, even if it's not the same kind of credit as you give him when he's making a case for the MVP last August.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we're not around, we can't tell, but just, you know, eyeballing it from what we see on the screen, it looks like the same Matt Carpenter, right? I mean, he's doing the same things. He's going about his business the same way. And like you said, if it was good enough for the last two or three years, why is it not good enough now? Especially with the team winning. It's a little bit strange. I mean, there's obviously some that are always going to be on Matt Carpenter's back. And there's times where he's given them plenty of ammunition. Don't get me wrong. But... yeah, the idea of the diva or whatever, which has kind of flared its head again a little bit this week, is a little bit strange. So let's talk a little bit about the bullpen, like you referenced a bit ago. We have seen a little bit of cracks in the armor. You know, Giovanni Gallegos gave up home runs and back-to-back outings. He's got kind of settled in after that last home run. He settled in, but we're not quite seeing that dominant force that we saw most of the summer. John Gant has kind of bounced around the second half. It's been kind of ugly. John Brebbia, for the most part, has been good, but we'll still kind of run into trouble here and there. And that is, you know, in part, the nature of relief appearances. But is it a concern that some of these guys have just kind of starting to hit a bit of a wall after carrying this team for so long?
I mean, I think it is a concern because it's been the backbone of this team. Mm-hmm. It's also a concern because while the starters have been great as of late, you really don't want to see, you know, 3, 4, 5 run leads slipping away on any sort of consistent basis, right? Especially when, you know, the bullpen has to cover it's 6 outs. Yeah. That's not a great sign.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's concerning. I think with every one of those guys in the bullpen, we've seen what bullpens do, right? A guy's arm gets a little tired. He isn't recovering quite like normal that week. He's a little extra sore, whatever. I don't know what it is, but we've seen John Gant go through that after really, talk about somebody carrying the team on his back. Mm-hmm. John Gant is the only reason they survived the first month of the season and were any kind of successful because the starting pitching was so bad. And then, you know, you start to see some of that wear and tear on John Brebbia, who played a significant role there as well. Then it became Giovanni Gallegos, who was the guy that was the fireman who came in absolutely absurd situations and somehow managed to get it done, but pitched very, very regularly. So, yeah, we're seeing some of the cracks. We're also seeing, like, Mike Myers deployed in situations where I'm not quite sure where that makes sense. But nonetheless, it's a concern. I'm not ready to, like, full-on panic about it because we have seen these sort of small slumps, a bit of a roller coaster this season with all of those guys. So that's sort of the nature of bullpens. It's not necessarily worth panicking over at the moment, but definitely something that they're going to be keeping an eye on and something that this team has to be aware of, right? I mean, this is, you can't let it slip away because of young pitching again. You've got to figure out how to get those outs. And I think part of the problem this week that sort of exaggerated what it looks like on paper and even the losses in some of those games, as you mentioned, the defense, particularly Paul DeJong, wasn't as rock solid as he has been most of the year. I also don't know when he's had an actual game off. So that's a thing to consider. But, you know, when he's hitting like he has been, it's hard to take him out of the lineup. I get that. But the thing is, a defensive mistake like that can't turn into 3 or 4 or 5 runs. Right. Like, that becomes on the pitcher at some point. Right. Yes, he has to get an extra out, but, you know, if you throw a middle fastball to a home run hitter and he mashes one, that's not Paul DeJong's fault. So, yes, the bullpen is a little bit scary right now. The good news this week is that Carlos Martinez has been pretty good and pretty consistently good, but you've got to figure out what that bridge to him looks like, especially when, you know, you do have some shorter starts. I also want to mention, sort of threw things off this week with the whole bullpen game with Michael Wacha starting on short rest. So in theory, that doesn't happen again when you can reset your schedule and everybody's back on track. So that may have exaggerated the problem a little bit. And hopefully we don't have to see that again.
Yeah, and that one was a little bit weird as well. I mean, again, I appreciate what Mike Shildt has done, and I get that. But, I mean, one, starting Michael Wacha on short rest, a little bit weird. Obviously, Michael Wacha pitched well for 2 innings. I'm a little surprised he didn't, you know, let Michael Wacha run a little bit longer instead of, I mean, yeah, you're assuming this is going to be a bullpen game, but, you know, Michael Wacha could probably go more than 20 pitches on his off day. You know, I don't know. I felt like maybe Mike Shildt had a little bit of that scripted and he didn't go deviate from script enough. The other side of that is, why don't you just start Ryan Helsley if you're going to have a bullpen game? But that's a battle that just nobody seems to be going to be able to win this year. But yeah, I think this is a big week, especially with the Rockies and the Brewers. You know, if you can get some leads, some good leads, some, you know, 3, 4, 5 innings, and let guys like Junior Fernandez, like Genesis Cabrera, let them get some innings. I mean,
who both looked good in limited appearances, by the way.
Right. I mean, you either, one, find out you've got another weapon, and maybe you start thinking about if they can make the postseason roster or should. Probably won't, but, you know, sometimes those fresh arms are what you need in October. But on the other side, it lets people like Gallegos and Gant and Brebbia rest. You know, they don't have to be out there covering the last 2 or 3 innings of a game. You've got other options. So hopefully we get to see a lot of that. We don't have a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games where, you know, you kind of have to, you feel like you have to go with the veteran of the year, at least, to lock things down. Yeah, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully a little bit of rest will do well. But like you said, the rotation is giving them some rest as well. From early in the year, where it seemed like nobody could go 5 innings, now it seems like everybody's going 6, 7 innings and doing it consistently. Jack Flaherty is getting regularly into the 7th or 8th and doing so with potential no-hitters involved, it seems like, almost every time. We've seen Dakota Hudson run low-scoring games as well. Like you said, Adam Wainwright, especially when he's at home. But even on the road this like yesterday, which broke the victory blue curse, which, you know, I'm not big on curses, but if it gets rid of those blue uniforms, I'd go for it. But, you know, seems like Adam likes them. I don't understand it. I always liked Adam Wainwright. I thought he had better taste than that. But anyway, so, you know, you're seeing those kind of outings, and that's kind of what this team's always been based on, right? If this team's going to win, most likely it's going to do it on the back of good starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we were afraid of when the Cardinals didn't make a move for pitching at the mm-hmm. at the trade deadline, right? Because up until that point, we hadn't really seen anything that led us to believe this was a rotation that was going to be able to get it done down the stretch, much less in the postseason when you're playing teams like the Dodgers or, you know, the whoever you end up facing, the Braves and their young superstars. It just didn't feel like it was the starting rotation, the kind of staff that you could trust in any one of those big games. And since then, man, I don't know if they're out to prove all of us that we're saying that wrong or if this is just who they've really been all along and it just took a while for it to settle in. But I'm not mad about it either way, because what Jack Flaherty is doing is absolutely extraordinary. And look, I really do think this is who Jack Flaherty has been all along. That's why it was so frustrating in the first half of the year watching him give up 6-run innings, because this is the kind of stuff that he's capable of. And we knew that. It was just a figuring out how they could get that out of him. And at some point, it's not so much about the pitching coach as it is about Jack Flaherty, just finding a different gear or finding a different zone to be in or finding it, whatever it is. And you have to talk to him. And, you know, sometimes I'm not sure they can even pinpoint what it is that made the difference. But this is who we expected Jack Flaherty to be. Dakota Hudson has been a very pleasant surprise since the really rough start to his season. Watching Adam Wainwright go out there every time and put together more good starts than bad is absolutely a joy. And regardless of whatever else happens this season, I'm so glad that we got another year of Adam Wainwright mm-hmm. with the St. Louis Cardinals. And maybe that is the emotional fan in me talking, but look, Adam Wainwright's been my guy for a long time, and it was really hard to watch him struggle like he did the last couple of years, and it was really scary to hear him say he thinks he's figured it out one more time and try to figure out what to do with that, but he really did, and it's been fun to watch him learn to trust himself again in the process of pitching. But then, you know, you add in the good starts that we've gotten from Michael Wacha, which still seem like a bit of an anomaly. You add in Miles Mikolas, who can go from okay to actually really good on any given day. And maybe that doesn't live up to the expectations set by last year, but it's done enough to push this rotation back into the conversation where you feel like they have a legitimate chance at winning every series because of the pitching they're putting out there, not just because of what the bullpen is capable of holding on to if the offense does its job.
Yeah, it's been fun. And, you know, if the Cardinals are going to win, that's how they're going to do it. And the offense behind it is kind of a gravy type of thing. I mean, obviously you have to have some, but, boy, watching Flaherty, you see what everybody was saying, right? I mean, that idea that he was coming up and he was going to be the next big ace kind of looked a little off the last, you know, last year, some of the beginning of this year. It's like, he's got the stuff, but is he ever going to be something more than a 5-inning pitcher? And I don't know what happened around that start in San Francisco, right around the All-Star break, but whatever clicked has been remarkable. And, you know, I think that he, along, you know, we start looking at this team, and nobody's going to win any major awards, but both him and I know I want to toss this in just for you, Colton Wong, should get some consideration. I mean, like I said, late, you know, somebody filling out their ballot and next to last spots or whatever may put these guys in. But they've done enough to get into some sort of a conversation, even if they haven't done enough to win it.
Yeah, and that's what's so exciting to see come together. And look, we give John Mozeliak a hard time a lot, but there are a lot of people in that front office that put a lot of time into trying to figure out who these young guys are going to be when they figure out what they're going to be as a professional baseball player. And man, it's exciting when you feel like you got it right, you know. That's how I always feel about Colton Wong when I see him succeed, is that, man, I knew this was there. I knew it was in there somewhere. It was just a matter of finding the right pieces to put around him and the experience that he needed to let it out. And, you know, then you start to see that with Jack Flaherty as well. It's got to be so rewarding for those guys in the front office, especially when, like, they didn't pull the trigger at the deadline, and then to see this as the aftermath. I'm not sure if that's reinforcing bad choices or not, but whatever it is, it's exciting to watch at this point. And you're right, man, specifically with Jack Flaherty and watching him today, watching him in the last couple of starts, there's everything about the body language, everything about the way that he does his job is so different than it was in the first half. And it's never been about Jack Flaherty not having good enough stuff. Mm-hmm. It's almost been about Jack Flaherty not being able to control it in the moment where there's like that, you're bordering on out of control and just absolutely phenomenal. And sometimes he would tilt to the wrong side of that. And just watching him today, man, he's one of those guys where when he is in a rhythm, he just catches the ball, rocks back and throws it. And, you know, he's hitting the glove every time, and he's mixing up his pitches, and he and Yadier are on the same page. And there's just almost that, it's the Chris Carpenter that has translated to Adam Wainwright thing where, you know, they kind of stalk around the mound after a strikeout. Like, yeah, that happened. I know. Let's do it again. And it's really, really fun to watch, to see him put those pieces together and, you know, kind of once again, like he did at times last year, really just take ownership of the opportunity to lead this pitching staff it's pretty exciting. And I think I've made it quite clear how I feel about Colton Wong, but you're right. He's proving a lot of people wrong, and he's also just sort of forcing his name into that conversation by quietly continuing to do what he does and wow people on nearly a nightly basis, whether it's at the plate or in particular on defense. So it's fun to watch when guys settle into what they're capable of like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And you said that about the trading deadline, and I feel like we probably talked about it a little bit around that time, but you know, when the front office doesn't make a deal, there's two ways to look at that. There's an idea that players are going to kind of look inward and say, we're not good enough, they don't trust us, or they're going to be able to say, look, they think we've got all the pieces we need, now we just have to prove that we can win. And it feels like the Cardinals have done the other part, you know, done that second half, and they've said, look, we know there's nobody coming, but we don't need anybody coming. And again, I don't know that justifies what the front office did or didn't do at the trading deadline. I'm not really sure that even, you know, a division title would quite do that, depending on what all the factors that went into why they didn't make a decision or make a trade. But it does kind of feel like this team kind of just rallied together and said, hey, we're going to win with what we've got, and they've been able to do it, and that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and to their credit, they've been pretty consistent about that all year, whether it's Adam Wainwright or Mike Schilt or, you know, Matt Carpenter or whomever it is that's being asked about it. Every one of them said, look, we know we've got more than people are giving us credit for. And I mean, they said it in spring training, right? They said, we're going to surprise a lot of people, mm-hmm. because a lot of people didn't think that they had enough. And I think it took a little while for that surprise factor to really set in. And they still got a lot of work to do before anyone's really, truly surprised by what they're doing. But yeah, it's similar to, we talked last week about the mental side of that back-to-back doubleheaders in their schedule and mm-hmm. how you could almost be defeated by that before you even started. They could have seen that same sort of mental letdown without the addition of any help at the trade deadline. And instead, it seems like they really took, again, ownership of that and said, all right, look, we're it, and we're good enough as it is, so we just have to play like it. And it's easy to say that, right? It's almost like saying, well, they just decided they wanted it more, and that's such a dumb thing to say about sports, but there is a mental side of it. There is the sort of, look, we're just going to do what we do, whether people think we're capable of it or not. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. At this point, it seems to be working for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's when you go back to 2011. Everybody points to that speech that Chris Carpenter gave to the team at the end of the year that basically said that, look, I don't know if we can win or not, but we're going to go out there and try and we're going to play Cardinal baseball the rest of the way. And sometimes you just need that focus of we're getting back to this, back to basics, back to what we can do. And when the winds start coming, then it's easy to ride the wave. So hopefully they can ride the wave quite a bit longer. They won't be doing any waves this week. They'll be out in Colorado, which is the mountains, so they don't have to worry about it. But the Cubs will be out on the West Coast. They go to the Padres tomorrow. Four games out there before they come back home for their final homestand of the year. That opens with the Pirates. Hopefully a West Coast trip. The Cubs have been bad on the road and going out the West Coast this time of year. Hopefully that means that things will not go well for them. But you know, it's kind of interesting to be scoreboard watching with the fact that you know that, hey, by the end of the night, the Cardinals are still going to be in first place. Or, you know, let's see if we can pad this lead rather than trying to cut into it. It's a perspective we haven't had in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's still terrifying with seven games left with the Cubs until it's like, you know, eight games, whatever the lead is that makes that irrelevant. But yeah, it's nice for the Cardinals to be in control of their own destiny. And for the last couple of years, it's even if they did what they could do, they still were depending on someone else to sort of help them out along the way. And that was to maybe just make it to a wild card game, right? Mm-hmm. Not to win a division and really be able to take a breath at that point and go, okay, we did this. Check that off the list. Now let's do the next thing. So, yeah, it's a cool position to remember how to be in as a fan. It's also a little terrifying because you keep waiting for the other shoe to drop at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of just enjoy every game for what it is and watch those games tick off the calendar. I think it was Jeff Jones was tweeting this afternoon about the way the records have to shift for the Cubs to end up beating the Cardinals. And I think if the Cardinals go like 9-10 the rest of the way, the Cubs have to play like 800 ball to catch up. So that's a good thing. You still are waiting for the other shoe to drop and figure out what terrible thing is going to happen. But it is nice to feel like you can sort of gain an advantage by winning instead of just, you know, not losing ground.
Yeah, and that's, you know, those seven games against the Cubs do loom large. There's no doubt about it. But if the Cardinals even if they just hold serve, you know, we're doing to the point where the Cubs have to win like five or six of those seven to be able to pass the Cardinals. And I'm not saying they can't do it because we've seen the Cubs and the Cardinals especially at Wrigley have some issues from the past. But, you know, just to be able to know that now, you know, hopefully a game like Friday night where they could have added another game to that lead won't come back to really bite them. But, you know, again, we're looking at magic numbers, and that's the thing. Magic numbers are great, and even if you win, as long as you win and the Cubs win, you still mark a number off that. You know, if you lose and the Cubs lose, you mark a number off that. The calendar is right now the Cardinals' friend. And every day that passes, if they can even keep a four game lead, they're in good shape. And so that's, you know, again, nobody's going to be content until there's that little X next to their name on the standings. But you're it's exciting. And like you said, nerve-wracking. But we'll somehow manage, I guess.
The best kind of nerves,
that's right. We'd much rather this than some others that we've had to deal with. All right, so Tara and I will be back with you next week. We'll talk about that trip to Colorado and then that homestand that begins with the Brewers next weekend. And hopefully we're talking about another, you know, maybe a little bit bigger than a 4.5 flame lead next week. We'll see how it goes. But for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us five of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.